Cactus Fields just outside of Everbank Field. J.P. Shadrick with you. Glad you're with us today for the start of Rookie Minicamp 2015, one of 2 days on the field for the newest Jaguars. Welcome in. Glad you're with us. Plenty to get to today. But this all started yesterday. The rookies arrived for the first time at Everbank Field on Thursday, went through physicals, team meetings, positional meetings to get ready for today's on-field workouts. That all started yesterday. Equipment, sizing, helmets, shoes, everything you can imagine for a football player was done yesterday so they can concentrate on today and tomorrow on the field. So we move to today on the field. The Jaguars will practice for about 2 hours today. The Jaguars rookies, that is, a mix of draft picks, rookie free agents, invited players to work out as well to fill out enough players to actually have a workout on the field. They're all on the field today. You can get in on the show at Jaguars, at J.P. Shadrick, at John Osier, at Jags Voice. And we welcome in Jaguars.com senior writer John Osier. Real football things happening on a real football field. Finally.
Yeah, and as you were talking, that's what I kept thinking about. First time in this atmosphere for us since training camp last year. First time seeing a practice since the end of last season. So I get that it's not the veterans. Blake Bortles isn't out here, and you're not going to see those guys. But you're seeing football. You see Doug Marone out there. You see the new coaches. And it's very much the feeling of this is the first thing. It's getting started. So here we go, and here you go.
Here we go, right. And here go the rookies. So they're in shorts. That's mm-hmm. obvious to see behind us. So
a couple of helmets, JP. We're going over that.
Maybe some helmets, yep. You know. But what can you get out of a weekend like this on the field?
Well, you know, it's not a weekend to draw conclusions. If you're out here and you see a guy who doesn't know his assignments or if he looks a little slower than you expected, it's not something to worry about at this point. What GMs and coaches really look for, especially general managers, is you don't want to be out there, you don't want to be sitting in your meeting room tonight going, yeah, I'm not sure that third round pick is what. I mean, this might be a real problem. So, and that happens sometimes. You know, so what you're looking for is guys who look like they belong, who look like they're not overwhelmed, and again, who look like they belong. Talking to one of the rookies today, free agent from, you just mentioned him to me. I'm drawing a blank.
From Mankato.
Yes.
The offensive lineman.
Chris Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, what is this whole process like? And he goes, you know, to be honest, early on today, I was nervous. I didn't know where I was going. I had no idea. You know, he described the clueless kid on the first day of school. And then he said, but then I realized the coaches are here to help me. I'm not supposed to be perfect today. And by noon, he said, I sort of had my feet under me, and I've got some confidence now. So that's what these guys are going through this weekend. That's what we're going to see on the field. It's what they're going through in the team meeting rooms.
They'll have it's just like a regular practice during a week. There are individual periods early in practice after a stretch period, and then some team install time and some other things like that. So it'll look very familiar if you're coming out today to what you would normally see on a regular Jaguars practice, except they're all pretty much new guys doing it.
Here's what this weekend is,
JP. Okay, John.
I'm walking about 10:30 in the rubber hallway today. I'm going one way, and all of a sudden I hear this. Hey, I turn around. It's two big guys I don't even recognize. And the question was, do you know where the practice fields are? So that's what's going on this week. And, you know, that's the reality of where these guys are. They're learning where the bathrooms are. They've got the senior writer leading them out to practice, which I'm sure later on they'll look back as a very dark time for them.
I was going to say, you could have led them anywhere you wanted to and had a good practical joke to start.
Let's just say I think they're out here. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. So, but in all seriousness, that is what they're going through. You got guys, when they come out of the hallway, they're worrying about which direction to go. They're worrying about how to get to their team meeting rooms. So that's very much an orientation process, an acclimation weekend. And that's what these guys are going through from Dante Fowler all the way down to the last tryout guy.
You're taking a look at players just before the stretch period begins. There'll be some early special teams work, then a full team stretch, and then the individual work after that. We'll stay with you. Brian Sexton's supposed to join us here shortly along with Jeff Loggeman, Jaguars Radio Network analyst. It all starts, though, with Dante Fowler Jr., mm-hmm. first-round pick, first chance for the fans to see him be in a Jaguar uniform, run around in person to see if he can kind of hang with it as the number three pick.
Yeah, and he's out there in the end zone getting ready to warm up. And I don't think you're going to see anything out of him that you wouldn't expect to see. When you think about it, this is what he's been doing for the last 2 or 3 months. running around in shorts, doing football things in an environment where he's supposed to excel. So all the top three or four guys, you'd expect to look very good. I expect Dante Fowler to look quick. I expect him to look quicker than the other pass rushers, more athletic, because guess what? That's why he was the number three overall pick in the draft. And all the linemen, all the interior guys, I'm sure Jeff Loggum would say the same thing this afternoon, or in a few minutes. Yep. You're not realistically going to get a very good idea over whether they can play or not this week. You're not going to get a very good idea whether they can play or not in OTAs or minicamp. That's going to take until training camp. So you wind up watching for the skill guys. There's not they have a tough time this week because it's Steven Morris and Waters who are throwing to him. So it's not Blake Bortles. So you have to take what they do with a grain of salt. But it's the time where you can see athleticism, and that should be at the skill positions.
You mentioned it. I think you hit it on the head. The interior line positions especially. It's very difficult to see without pads where those guys stand.
Well,
you just can't do that.
It's impossible. And when you talk to Bastelli and Logman, who are sort of lineman guys on Jaguars.com, they'll tell you, you can look for things out here. There's a little bit of one-on-one going on to a very, very small extent. You can see them set up. You can see quickness. And I'm sure Logman will get on here later on and go, I like that guy. But he'll also know there's not much you can see until you get to pads on with these guys, which starts in August.
It's a strikingly accurate representation.
I've been around Jeff a little bit.
We all have. And we'll have him on here coming up shortly. Skill positions. You can see how a guy can run a route, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he can or can't, and how the coaches will interact with that type of thing, especially at wide receiver today.
I think one thing to watch for, it's always interesting if you're a fan out here, which to watch Jerry Sullivan and watch him work with younger players. Rashad Green talked a lot about looking forward to working with Jerry. And he said something interesting yesterday. He said he didn't see Jerry as a real, you know, I forget the phrase he used, but get on you, high-strung guy. He might see a different Jerry every now and then. You know, but it's going to be about fundamentals, and it's going to be about starting from scratch. Jerry Sullivan said something interesting about Rashad Green when talked about him, that he believes he's very coachable, and he believes that that's going to work out very well. So I would expect to see Jerry Sullivan very happy with Rashad Green after these, because he thinks he's a guy who's far ahead and already knows how to run routes and will be coachable.
Back to some of the big guys, some news out of the locker room earlier today. Michael Bennett, the sixth-round pick out of Ohio State, will not practice this weekend. Hamstring injury, a return-to-play protocol for him. Nothing major, just wanted to kind of hold him out this weekend. We'll see in a couple weeks when OTAs roll around if he's back on the field.
And that occurred during his pro day, I believe. So they knew that coming in. They weren't expecting – it wasn't a big shock, and it's not considered a big issue. I would expect him to start – working during the OTAs and even before that when they go on the field here in the next few weeks.
What else stood out in the locker room to you today? You said you mentioned the Mankato offensive
mm-hmm.
lineman.
Chris Reed.
Talking to Bennett.
Well,
anybody else stand out?
A little bit. It was interesting talking to Reed. This is a kid who is an athletic offensive lineman. He signed as a rookie free agent. We got most of the draft picks yesterday, so that was a lot of what we had on Jaguars.com yesterday. Reed won the shot put title twice when he was in college.
In Division II, yes.
Did that. So he's athletic. He started concentrating on football a couple years in when the coaches told him, hey, you might be able to make it. So he's a typical example of a free agent story. That's how those guys make it in this league. There are stories of free agents who come along and do that, especially as offensive linemen. So, again, he's a guy to watch, but all these guys are a guy to watch. It's interesting that there's only 9 free agent rookies this year. That's not as many as usual.
That's right.
So you have 17 of that group, and it's why you see a lot of tryout guys here today and a smaller group of people that you're actually looking at with the names that you expect to be on this roster come fall.
And that means the roster's a little deeper overall, so you don't have as many that you have to work out on this weekend.
Yeah, they've got more veterans right. Who they've kept, more veterans who they've signed.
It happens over
more
time.
More slots yeah. Where you would expect them to feel solid. So does it translate on the field next year? Who knows? But that's where they certainly, if there's a theme over the last month, it's that they certainly feel far better about this roster coming into this than they did a couple years ago. That's a story for another time. Right now, it's about getting to know these rookies.
John, have a blast today. We'll look forward to reading your stuff after the practice a little later today. Of course, come join us at Rookie Minicamp coming up tomorrow, today and tomorrow, but get your tickets for tomorrow, 1:10 p.m. start on Saturday. Register for a free ticket at jaguars.com/rookie minicamp. And we welcome in senior correspondent Brian Sexton for a little more perspective here on a gorgeous day for football.
That's
by
really
way.
Nice. Especially with the polarized lenses. Gives you a really crisp look at the field.
It's very nice. You could see a fish like 3 feet below water if you were wearing those.
Well, I'm not logging it.
Well, I'll ask him. I forgot. He's next.
Right,
he's next. This is a fun day because it's the first chance for fans to get a look at something on a field of grass between lines that resembles football.
Yeah, it's a great day for a fan to come out here and, you know, reconnect with their team, even though, you know, most of these guys won't be here. But, yeah, to see the logo on a nice day, to, you know, to be able to see that there's some progress going on, it really is. For the fans, it's a nice day to come out.
Biggest storyline for you this weekend, what do you want to see out of these two practices? And maybe a player that stands out, you just want to see a guy that can run fast, or what are you looking for? What do you look for? Or do you wait till minicamp?
I got to be honest with you. I don't get much out of this. You know, I mean, I saw Fowler, and I saw Yeldon, but I saw them when they came through, and I talked to them in early April. Yeah. So I know they're big, and you can tell that they're in great shape. If Bortles were here, it would be different. Obviously, you're working with Stephen Morris. So I guess I want to see Rashad Greene run some routes with Stephen Morris throwing the ball because Morris understands, you know, the route tree and the progressions and all of that stuff. So, yeah, a little bit of that. But, you know, for the most part, I'm just out here looking, seeing if someone catches my eye. I heard John talking about the offensive lineman from Minnesota State. Well, all right. You know, maybe that guy catches your eye because – but the big guys are so hard.
They
don't, you know, they don't have the pads on at this point. So, you know, I guess I'll look for Yeldon and see how smooth of a runner he is and how he accelerates. And, you know, perhaps I'll pay attention to Rashad Greene and see if he's that precise route runner that I watched when he was at Florida State and that I've heard so much about. You know, Neil Sterling, let's see how well he runs. You know, the kid from Monmouth who is big and obviously has a nice stride to him. So, for me, I'm just kind of getting a look at it. The OTAs are where I'll start to dial in a little bit more.
The stretch period about to begin. You'll hear a lot of music behind us coming up. But
yeah, I'll pay attention to the soundtrack and see what Tyler Wolf has been doing this offseason.
It'll also be interesting to see, for me at least, the two Auburn guys. Nick Marshall changing to cornerback. Can he hang at that position? He played it as a freshman at Georgia and then played quarterback after that, of course, at Auburn and a community college before that, and then moved back to cornerback before the Senior Bowl in Mobile with this Jaguars staff. And then Corey Grant, a running back, but could be a kick returner, and they don't call him taillights for nothing.
Yeah, no, the guy's got great acceleration. I'll look at Marshall a little bit, but having seen guys make that position switch before, it's easy to understand the athleticism is there for them to do it, but it just takes repetition and time and time and time in order to be able to do that. So, you know, my expectations for a guy like Nick Marshall are, do you look lost?
Right.
Or, you know, by the time he leaves here tomorrow, you know, can he do one or two things well?
He seemed confident. They all seem confident in the locker room. That's the way they're going to be
going
into the first
practice.
The
best players at their program, no matter what program they came from. If Nick Marshall isn't thought to be one of the best players that Auburn's had the last 2 years, I'd be surprised.
But even in a different role, and we'll see how that works today. You're watching live coverage of the Jaguars stretch. The individual period is due up after this. Different positions will break off into different groups. Jeff Logan will join us during that period for some analysis as well. You know, this is a weekend, we were talking about John earlier, there's 8 draft picks. There are 9 rookie free agents that are signed. I think there are 9 first-year players that are out here working out as well. That leaves, 28 invited players to come out here to just fill out space. But in general, the 17 rookie free agents and draft picks, it's not as deep as it was in the years past because the roster is now a little bit deeper the last 2 years.
You know, the thing that strikes me about this weekend is the coaching staff. There's been some new additions to Gus's staff, notably, obviously, Greg Olsen and Doug Marrone on the offensive side. But they're out here working in honest-to-goodness practice for the first time as a group. And Gus talks all the time about having a developmental coaching staff. Well, we should see a little bit of that this week. because this is a developmental group of players. Obviously, the 8 draft choices that you've got are guys that in some way, shape, or form you're going to count on to contribute this year. But the rest of these guys are going to be practice squad guys. They're going to hope to find a role there, which means that you will have the opportunity to play to the strength of your coaching staff and develop them.
It will be, yeah. We'll see how Doug Marrone interacts with some young players coming off a head coaching gig now and changing his role. That's a storyline that we've kind of left off the last couple months. Just kind of got under the radar because of the draft and all that. But
you may see some energy from him because, yeah, over the years, coaches have come away from head coaching jobs or even coordinator roles, and they have said how much they enjoy just getting back to coaching a position. Because there's so much, there's media responsibilities and personnel responsibilities, and, you know, it just becomes a bigger job than simply coaching, except for the position coaches. They really work with their guys. So you see a Doug Marrone, I bet he's really enjoying the chance to get out here and honest to goodness put his hand in the ground and coach these guys.
Oh, you ask Gus Bradley, I think that's one thing he would, he misses being in the position room with
you
the
bet.
Guys, you know, going through the tape.
You bet.
A coach
watching
just
guys
coach,
develop.
You
know? You bet.
It's the way that works. Brian Sexton is with us. We're live from the Florida Blue practice fields as the Jaguars stretch before rookie minicamp today and tomorrow. This could have been next weekend, but the coaching staff and the Jaguars staff decided to do it this weekend. Either it could have been either weekend in the National Football League. There are some rookie camps that happen next weekend.
And there will be a number of these guys that will be looking for an invitation as a tryout player in other camps.
I think the most successful tryout workout player, it's got to be Mike Brown.
It's the only one I can think of.
At least in the Jaguars
realm.
Yeah,
it's the only guy who has stuck around and actually played in an NFL game. So it's the only one. It's a very rare situation. I mean, the draft choices obviously are brought in with the idea they're going to make your roster. And they may only make, you know, the lower round guys may only contribute on special teams or maybe a practice squad candidate. And then you've got the undrafted. You know, two or three of those guys tend to hang around every year, although, as you mentioned earlier, with a deeper roster, it may only be one guy, and he may well earn his right on special teams.
Right.
So, you know, you filter all the way through that, and a guy who's here from Mankato State, right, you know, his chances of making the roster are very, very, very slight. He's hoping to keep getting invited and keep getting better and suddenly find a chance to maybe jump onto a practice squad sometime in November. I mean, it's just very, very, very slight. So what Mike Brown did in perspective, it's amazing.
It's funny the links these guys go to try to stick in the National Football League, guys that maybe are on that type of level that have to come work out. There's a story of at the combine, a guy didn't get invited to a combine. He was the East Carolina long snapper, but he had koozies made with his statistics on it and his school and his name, and he put them in the restaurants in Indy where all these coaches and personnel people go. And guess what? He signed the other day for a workout.
What was the name of the single-A team that you worked for? I mean, my first job, I was calling 8-man high school football.
Yeah.
I mean, we all do that.
That's right.
In every walk of life, this is their dream. It's what they want to do. They've got another line of work lined up for them at some point in time. We all have to have that, but at this moment, here is their last, best, youngest chance, you know, to get out there and get it done. Because guess what? Next year, there's a whole new group.
Right.
So, I mean, you've got to fight and bite and claw and, you know, do whatever it takes to get that coach's, you know, attention enough to write your name down so that when they say, hey, we need someone for the practice squad in November to get out here and work with us. What about that kid from Mankato State that was here for the you know, I liked him. He could probably come help us. Is he available? Yeah, someone call him off the John Deere and let's see if he's ready to go.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes.
That's the way it works. Brian, we'll look forward to your coverage all weekend here on Rookie Minicamp, and thanks a lot, man.
Right. Time to talk fishing, right?
Get some sun today. We will talk fishing with Jeff Blogeman, but of course get your season tickets for the 2015 campaign. Get more in 2015, become a Jaguars season ticket member and get access to amazing benefits 365 days a year. Stadium experience here, of course, voted number one by the fans in the National Football League. Great seating options available. Visit Jaguars.com/tickets or call 633-2000 today. JP Shadrick with Jeff Loggeman now at Rookie Minicamp. Gorgeous day. Can't ask for a better weather for some actual football.
I got my sunblock on.
Yeah, you do.
In my long sleeves.
And your glasses,
you know,
your shirt, you got it all. And there's actual football. Almost football going on.
Kind of like football.
Yeah.
With a lot of rookies. No, it's good. It's a great opportunity, I think, for me, and I think for coaching staff and the scouts to kind of look at these guys and see how athletic they look. You know, obviously it's kind of hard to tell a lot, but it's more more of a drill kind of a thing to get them acclimated to everything so that when they get to the OTAs and the mandatory mini camp, then it's not like you're trying to drag along the rookie.
We talked about this on radio last night, that the interior line especially is very tough to judge until really training camp, right?
Right. I think it's probably nearly impossible. But the one thing that you can find out is, that do they even have the athleticism to be able to compete physically? And I think that that's not very difficult to tell. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's been a lot of guys that really look good athletically. You know, out here when there was no pads on, and then when the pads came on, they just couldn't compete, you know. But that, so at least you can find out athletically, do they have the gift? And then once the pads come on, then you can further evaluate it. But it's, you know, it's this is a great opportunity. It's also a great opportunity to find out maybe there's a couple guys you really like athletically that you might want to offer a contract to bring to training camp and bring to your active roster. So, great opportunity for Dave Caldwell and his staff.
I mean, I look good athletically, but probably not between the lines.
Well, so do I, but that doesn't mean anything.
That's right. Dante Fowler Jr., biggest name here, obviously, the number 3 overall pick. You'll see him athletically on the outside some.
Yeah, and you know, it was really fun because, you know, prior to the draft, you know, you evaluate all these top guys, and he was a guy that I watched a lot of film on, Leonard Williams and TJ Yeldon. I watched all these guys, you know, prior to. And then after the draft, you go back and you do more. You know, you watch more than you did initially because you're just watching enough just to get an idea of what these guys are and where they kind of fit in the draft. And now you dig a little bit deeper. And the more you dig with Dante Fowler, the more you like. You know, you go back and you watch some of the games toward the end of the season when there was not a whole lot to play for. The game that he had in Birmingham with the bowl game was just simply spectacular. You know, and he was absolutely outstanding effort-wise.
In a game that really didn't matter, well, in the grand scheme of things.
They always matter because they're at the end of the day, they're keeping
game.
Score.
Sure.
You know, but I mean, that's the kind of athlete you want, is a guy that keeps score.
Let's have a seat for a moment. We'll watch some of Jaguars practice as they have just finished the stretch period. Jeff Lagerman is with us, and you're taking a look at Dante Fowler Jr. for the first time, wearing number 56. 6'3", 261 pounds. That's a big, big fella.
Well, he's a big boy, and a lot of people have made that an issue when the conversation goes to the Leo position. I was the original Leo. When Pete Carroll instituted the Leo position, that's what I did when I was in New York and Pete Carroll's first time in the National Football League. So, you know, I weighed 262, you know, 264. You know, Pete had me dropping back into pass coverage. I mean, weight is not an issue. A lot of people think that the Leo position is designed for a 250-pound guy. No, that's not it. It's more about what kind of athleticism and speed can you carry on the field to be able to rush the pass or hold up against the run, and then also to be able to drop in coverage. And Dante Fowler has all those abilities. Whatever he played at last year at the University of Florida is going to be fine for him playing the Leo position, because watching him in all the different positions that he lined up in, he was more than stout enough, he was more than fast enough, and more than quick enough.
As the first Leo, as you said it, do you help out the staff a little bit in evaluation, some of these guys?
No. No, but you know, it's pretty interesting in that, you know, this was, you know, going all the way back to 1990, which is, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And the terminology is still pretty much the same. A lot of the terminology in the defense, a lot of the calls are still exactly the same as what they were when Pete Carroll brought his defense and his vision of the defense to the National Football League. You know, and obviously a lot of influence from Monty Kiffin, one of the great defensive coordinators to ever coach in the National Football League. A little bit of Tony Dungy influence. So there's a lot of contributors to that defense. But that, you know, this defense that Gus is teaching has even Gus's own little personal slant on it. But the basis of it comes from Pete Carroll.
Taking a look at special teams work, the individual position groups will begin after this very short period.
And these drills, JP, that they're doing right now with Mike Mallory and Coach Smiley, I mean, these drills here are where a lot of these guys are going to make it or not make this football team.
Right.
You know, obviously, Dante Fowler is not going to be a core four special teamer. I mean, he's going to have a prominent role on defense. TJ Yeldon is not going to be a core four special teamer. But for the most part, everybody else is going to be a core four special teamer if they want to make this football team. And one of the guys that I really like watching is the wide receiver, Neil Sterling from as I was corrected last night, it's Monmouth, not Monmouth.
It is Monmouth, indeed.
Monmouth. Yeah, and here's a wide receiver that they picked up late in the draft in the seventh round. He got great size, 6'3", 238 pounds. And if you're a wide receiver that has those type of measurables, the opportunity that he will probably have of seeing the field as a wide receiver are going to be small. But the opportunity of being active on game day with a wide receiver that's 6'3 and 235, 238 pounds is pretty good if you're going to be good on special teams. And that size and those measurables are going to give him a chance to stick if he can become a really good special teams player and then develop the wide receiving part or the tight end skills later on.
And as we talked about last night, too, that his film is in Monmouth against that level of player in that type of football. It's a different world when you get out here and you get between these white lines.
Yeah, that was one of the things I think that was probably the eye-opener for me. You know, when I made that change from the college level to the pro level. I mean, there's a significant jump when you go from the high school level to the college level because, you know, there's a lot of growth that happens in young men from the age of 18 to sometimes, or in some cases, 22 or 23 years old when they're in college, especially guys that are 50-year seniors that had a redshirt. But the jump from the college game to the pros is probably even more because not only are you shrinking that pool of talent down to a very small number from thousands and thousands of college players, but you're also expanding the age bracket. You know, the players in the National Football League can range in age from 21 and in some cases to 37 years old. And I'm talking about regular positions, not necessarily just, you know, kickers and quarterbacks sometimes can go to 40 years old. So it's amazing how much better that the athletic pool becomes when you come to the National Football League. It really shocked me.
Even for a Division I player. I mean, that's
still a big jump.
But
still
even,
a huge jump.
Even more for a guy from Monmouth.
Yeah, it's a very big jump from the small school guys. You know, there's a lot of guys that are out here trying out. You know, you got, you know, the Citadel represented, Appalachian State, Monmouth, Portland State, Tennessee Martin, a lot of these small schools, Minnesota State, Mankato. I mean, these are all small schools. Then it's an even bigger jump for them. I mean, I went from Virginia to the NFL, which some people would say that Virginia was a small school back then, but it's a big jump.
But there's some good walleye fishing in Mankato.
I'm sure. In fact, trying to think of the name of the quarterback, the most famous Minnesota, Mankato State guy. Gosh, I can't even remember his name. Todd Bowens?
Bowman.
Todd Bowman.
Yeah.
Great guy. I believe he was a Mankato State guy.
There you have it. Hey, nice. Jeff Loggeman with us, Jaguars.com, live from Rookie Minicamp. We're taking a look at special teams drills. The drill is about over. They're about to shift to individual position work, it appears, where they'll split up with different position coaches, and we'll go through a few of those before we get out of here today.
Well, they're a little limited on what they can and cannot do based on the collective bargaining agreement. You're not allowed to do any one-on-ones in this camp, so you're not going to see T.J. Yeldon versus Dante Fowler Jr. in a one-on-one pass rush drill or in pass coverage. You're limited to individual drills and then seven-on-seven and team drills. So, you know, the guidelines you have to follow. Otherwise, you could face a fine or losing draft picks down the road, and that would not be a good thing.
Last couple of minutes of special teams here. A little lull in the action. Gus Bradley standing off to the far left out of your screen right now, just kind of surveying the entire field.
I know all these coaches, I mean, they've been chomping at the bit. You know, they've got an entirely new offensive staff for the most part. You know, and this is also a great kind of a mechanical walkthrough for them, having the rookie mini camp first, so that they can understand how they're all going to be working together, because it's all new for them. You know, Doug Marrone, you know, has never worked with Greg Olsen before. You know, and some of the offensive staff that stayed on board have never worked with each other. So there's a lot of new components, a new running backs coach, new offensive line coach, a new offensive coordinator. And it's good that they get this opportunity to kind of work some of the kinks out prior to when the veteran OTA day start, and also the mandatory minicamp.
A meeting room is one thing, but then you get out on the field and things change even inside the coaching staff. You know, the dynamic can change a little bit once you get between the lines.
Yeah, and I think it's going to work really well together. You know, I really thought that Greg Olsen was going to stick and be the offensive coordinator when Gus Bradley was hired, because there was a relationship between Greg Olsen and Gus, obviously from their time spent together at Tampa Bay. And I think that, you know, they obviously wanted to make a departure from everything that was Mike Mularkey, but glad it kind of came back to Greg Olsen. I have a lot of respect for Greg. He's an excellent offensive mind. What he was able to do with the Oakland Raiders
and a young quarterback there, I think, speaks for itself. And I think he's going to be able to do some of the same things that helping Blake Bortles and also helping that offensive line protect Blake Bortles.
When we get to position groups, we'll talk about those guys a little more. But when you came as a rookie, was there a rookie camp? What was your transition like the first week or so?
Yeah, we didn't really have any of those. The rules were basically you had a mandatory mini camp, and then you had a couple get-togethers, you know, after that, and that was really about it. You know, a lot of the rules kind of came about from when Jimmy Johnson came into the league in 1989 and thereafter, because Jimmy Johnson basically was one of the guys who committed to a complete offseason and a whole schedule of activities for the players, you know, team lifting together and running. You know, because before that, very few teams did that, if any. Most of the players were scattered across the country, came back together for a mini camp after the draft, and then came back to training camp. And it was almost kind of a reunion, yeah, kind of a party atmosphere when you got back for training camp and not so much going back to work, you know, but Jimmy
not
was...
that you would be involved in any
well,
of
no,
that.
No, no, but it course, was, you know, Jimmy yes. really was the one who really pushed the modern-day NFL to where it is today as far as the offseason and all the different activities are about it. And then you had guys that pushed the envelope, like Tom Coughlin, and Jimmy also pushed the envelope, and then you had the union and the ownership come to an agreement on what was allowable and what was not, so that they didn't just absolutely run the players into the ground. And also the staff, you know, because staffs had to have some guidelines because, you know, coaching staffs in the National Football League never want to be outworked. So it was good that they put the guidelines in place.
Were you involved with the union at that point when there were changes such as that?
I was, and you know, we had to tweak some of the rules, you know, because of Tom Coughlin, but it worked out fine. And you know, Tom, I remember the first year in 1995, you know, there was a set of guidelines after Jimmy Johnson was doing a lot of different things, and then Tom Coughlin wanted to push the envelope a little bit further. He actually used up all of the off-season activities that he was allowed to do, and then still wanted players to report to training camp 5 days prior to the mandatory report date. But he didn't want to count those as part of the off-season things. He wanted to just tie it into training camp. So there was a few adjustments that had to be made with Tom Coughlin and the National Football League, but it all worked out.
Final few moments. This looks like punt coverage. And then they'll move to individual position drills.
There's Dante Fowler working in. I mean, he's a first round, you know, number three overall pick, but when doesn't matter. You still have to go through all the special teams drills. And you can see the size of him. He's got some size to him, and it's going to be fun to watch him develop.
Okay, so they're breaking up into different positions. We'll stay with you during this period. You don't mind sticking around, do you?
No, I can see a lot from here.
Talking about some of these guys. The wide receivers will be right here in front of the grandstand, so Jerry Sullivan will get a chance to work with Rashad Green, Neil Sterling, and all the rest who are working out at receiver. It's always interesting to watch Jerry work with these guys.
He's one of the best coaches in the National Football League and arguably the best wide receivers coach that there is. And you see number 84 there, that's Tony Washington, a first-year player from Appalachian State. Didn't take very long to give out Cecil Shorts' number. That's the way it works in the National right. Football League. And then Rashad Green wearing number one, as we just saw right there. Went back and from watching the film on him yesterday, he's a really smooth wide receiver. You'd like to see him maybe put on a few pounds to get a little bit more size. But watching the film of him at Florida State, when Jameis Winston would get into trouble, or anything that things went wrong, you could tell that Jameis Winston trusted Rashad Green completely, and his eyes immediately went to find him. And he threw to a lot of tight windows to Rashad Green. That's one thing that probably impressed me the most, or one of the things that impressed me the most, besides how smooth he was that how he made contested catches with defenders all over him and in very tight windows. I think he's a nice pickup for this football team. He's a very polished receiver. You know, all of these college wide receivers have a lot to learn, but I think his learning curve is not going to be as steep coming from a pro-style offense like sure. he did at Florida State.
You got to remember at Florida State, too. Remember, Kelvin Benjamin was gone, so Green was kind of the old man of the group, and there were a lot of young guys that were around on that wide receiver crew. So he was the calm, trusted veteran in Tallahassee, and it added up to over 1,300 yards last year.
Well, and I got a lot of respect for him because he stayed at Florida State for all 4 years, and he left the ACC, and Florida State is the all-time leading receiver.
That's something to say. That's cool.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive, and from what I understand, a very quiet, soft-spoken guy. But, you know, I know that from reading some of the articles, you know, the coaching staff and the scouting staff ask a lot of the players at these different schools, if you could take one guy with you to the NFL, who would you take? And a lot of the Florida State guys said that they would take Rashad Greene. That's a huge compliment to him.
And we'll go to the other field on the far left side now, Patrick Cavanaugh, our producer behind us on the camera today, and look at the defensive backs. You know, not much of a James Sample was picked up in the draft, but, last year, of course, first couple of years, a lot of defensive backs were brought in via the draft, but this year didn't have to do that as much. But Sample's a guy that they want to look at free safety, it sounds like.
Yeah, he only had 1 year as a starter at Louisville. You know, he originally signed and went to University of Washington, had an injury his freshman year, played sparingly, and then transferred to a junior college because they wanted to make him move to linebacker, and he didn't want to do that. Goes to junior college and then goes to Louisville for 1 year. Supposedly walked into Louisville a couple days before training camp and is named the starter right out of the gate. Yeah. Has a very productive year, 4 interceptions. Excellent open field tackler, which I think that has to be priority number one when you're talking about the safety position. Does he have the range of some of the great free safeties that have played in the National Football League? Probably not, but he has good enough range to play at free safety. I know tackling in the open field was somewhat of an issue in the past here, especially the last couple of years with Brzezinski, and Evans has had some struggles. Even Cyprian has had some struggles. I think that's the one thing that really impressed me about James Sample, his ability to tackle in the open field. And when given the opportunity, he's got good ball skills, really good ball skills. Probably could have had 7 interceptions if he had made 3 that were really tough from watching his film. So I think he's going to be a guy that I think day one might be a starter in the secondary.
Sample wearing number 36 with the defensive back group over there on the far side.
Yeah, and then the other guy that's pretty an interesting is the former quarterback from Auburn, Nick Marshall.
Yes.
Was actually played some cornerback, I think, at a previous university.
Well, he played at Georgia for 13 games his freshman year and then transferred to play quarterback, went to junior college.
Well, and it worked out great for him. I mean, you know what, he won a national title, right? At the University of Auburn, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
Didn't he whoop up on your Alabama Crimson Tide, I think, at one point?
There was a game where there was a field goal returned for a touchdown that he was involved in.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He didn't have much to do with that. That's okay.
No, but, you know, he was on that team, so he gets credit for that.
That's true.
You know, but he's an extremely athletic guy. I was talking to a couple scouts about him, and they said that he played cornerback at the Senior Bowl, and extremely athletic, very good hips. You know, and I think this is a guy that it could be a little bit of a project, and you never have enough corners in the National Football League, and he definitely has the characteristics to play corner. So he's a guy that, you know, could be practice squad, but you never know. I mean, there's a lot of guys that develop fast, and because he has some background playing the position, it's not like this is a completely radical change for him.
Sure, and he's got the perfect build for it, 6'1", 210 pounds. We actually saw him here a second ago, not that this means anything, but on the punt coverage group with a 3-on-1, he was actually back here fielding one of the punts, trying to get past the guy, and actually made a pass through a few guys.
I think
he can run,
well,
too.
Well,
you
see me right there. He's number 41,
yeah.
Nick Marshall.
Which is the inverse of what he had at Auburn,
14.
That's the reason why he wanted 41.
I think one thing that you would be somewhat concerned about is that you got to be physical playing on the defensive side of the ball. And look, I'm not saying that all the quarterbacks that play wear dresses, but I mean, it's a different mentality playing defense.
I think you just said it.
Well,
you said it without saying it.
Well, I mean, I didn't. I'm not trying to criticize anybody, but it's a different level of being physical. I mean, quarterbacks are some of the toughest guys in the world. Trust me, I couldn't sit back there and take a pounding like some of these quarterbacks do, but it's just a different mentality, you know. But that's the one good thing. He's got some experience playing in the secondary. And I think he's got an opportunity, and a great opportunity. And he's got some nice size to him now. I mean, he's 6'1", 217 pounds. That's big for a cornerback, and that's the way the Jaguars like him.
Let's go to the far right side of the far field, the defensive field, defensive line. You know, as we said earlier, it's going to be tough to judge this kind of group, except maybe the outside guys. You'll get an idea of Fowler's speed and ability on the outside, but in terms of physicality in the middle, that'll be tough to decipher this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get a gauge on that when there are no pads. But, you know, the one thing you get a gauge on, as we talked about, is the athleticism that these guys have. You know, there's a couple guys that may have a chance. And we all know that Dante Fowler is, you know, is going to be an excellent football player, or believe he's going to be an excellent football player. Really like the addition of Michael Bennett in the sixth round from Ohio State.
And he's out this weekend with a hamstring. He won't practice this weekend.
You know, but the one, you know, the thing with him is that he fell probably to the sixth round. Is that after the season, the college season ended, a lot of the pro day, the combine stuff, he couldn't do some things because he had some injuries. Now, here's a guy that at Ohio State never had any injuries. You know, so this was a little bit kind of out of sorts for him. Probably one of the reasons why that he fell, because coaches want to make sure that they see exactly, you know, what the bill of goods that they saw, right, you know, on film, and they want to see it up close and personal. But I think that he could be a real nice addition for this football team and some value. Now, and if he makes it, he's gonna earn it. You know, because that defensive line group now has a lot of guys that have some talent, especially with the money that they spent in free agency, and then you got a draft pick. You know, that room has become crowded and very talented. So, but that's a good thing. Competition is always good.
Let's go between fields now and take a look at the running backs, and it starts with T.J. Yeldon out of Alabama. It started in Tuscaloosa with one of the, well, actually the best freshman year in that school's history, and he built an outstanding career splitting time at Alabama, but now is going to be fighting to be a feature guy, and he feels he's a three-down type of back.
Well, I mean, he comes from a big-time program, University of Alabama. Last year, I don't think he had a great offensive line at the University of Alabama. I think
not
it was just
like
an
the
okay.
Years past.
No, because they've had some really good ones at Alabama. You know, he's got size. You know, he's 225, somewhere in that range. Got the height. He'll probably be bigger, but I don't know necessarily if that's the thing for him. But he's got great vision. I mean, he's got excellent vision. The one thing that he doesn't have is that top-end speed. At the combine, he ran like a low 4.6, and then on his pro day, he was in the low 4.5, so he improved it a little bit. But, you know, the days of Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew, when they hit an opening and all of a sudden take it, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 yards, because those guys could run 4.4, and Fred probably ran sub 4.4, that's not what T.J. Yeldon is. You know, when you watch the college tape on him, he's extremely elusive. He's got great vision. He anticipates defenders and makes a miss. So he's a guy that does not take a lot of hits. But when he does get in the opening on the field, it's not like he's running away from guys. He typically gets caught. But that's okay. And you know, that's one of the reasons why you want to move the chains and then let some of the other playmakers run away from people. And they got some that can do that. Marquise Lee is one of the fastest guys I've seen on the field in the last couple of years for the Jaguars.
Another guy to keep an eye on is Corey Grant. He's wearing number 33, the Auburn running back and kick returner. At his pro day, Mike Mayock clocked him at a 4.24.
That's right. And from talking to the Jaguar scouts, they said he's, you know, unbelievably fast. He is a legitimate 4.24. But the one thing, I think the criticism of him, or the drawback to him, is the ability to change direction. You know, there's some guys that have great straight line speed. The great ones have straight line speed and the ability to have a little shimmy along the way, and that's not his strong suit. But he also has the ability to maybe be a returner. And when you run 4.24, if you can bring a home run threat as a kick returner, whether it be kickoffs or punts, you know, you've got an opportunity to stick if you can show that you're productive.
Quite a history returning kicks at Auburn University. We go down to the far right of the near field and look at offensive line. And as we said earlier, it's almost the same as defensive line. It's tough to truly judge, but there are a few names that stand out in this offensive line group working out today. And A.J. Cann is one of those. The third-round pick out of South Carolina could be competing for a spot in the interior.
Well, he's been 5 years at the University of South Carolina, 4 years as a starter, very dependable, consistent, strong. You know, when you look at his combine reps on the bench press, he's one of the strongest offensive linemen that participated at the combine. You know, and with offensive linemen, it so much depends on what's around you and how well that you do is based upon what the guy next to you is doing. The left tackle of South Carolina was not a very good football player from watching the film. But A.J. Cann, consistent, dependable, anticipates a lot of the stunts in the games. He can move people. He definitely got an extremely strong right hand. He needs to get a little bit better with his left hand. He gets a little bit sloppy with that. But he's going to create competition at the left guard spot, because Zane Beatles, who was brought in last year, as an unrestricted free agent disappointed. You know, and you really needed to, one wanted to solidify that position because it also helped stabilize a young Luke Jokel. And they didn't get that production out of Zane Beadle. So this is going to be an all-out competition for the starting left guard spot. And it will be interesting to see how it plays out because I know that Zane Beadle is capable of more than what he showed last year. Now, another interesting project or an interesting prospect that they brought in is the offensive guard. His name is Chris Reed, wears number 64 from Minnesota State Mankato, which we were talking about earlier. Yep. You know, he's one of these guys that's got an opportunity, undrafted guy. You know, he's got an opportunity to at least make the practice squad. They really like him athletically. We'd like to see him get a little bit bigger, and it's kind of surprising that you say a guy who weighs 305, you want to see him get bigger. But that's just kind of how it is in the NFL anymore. I mean, if you're not 310, 315, 320, you're not big enough anymore.
This it kind of reminds me a little bit of, remember Drew Nowak when he came through here? Like a smaller school guy.
Drew Nowak.
And they moved him over to
offensive line. Was a former defensive lineman at college.
And small school guy and had to kind of bulk up and learn how to play the position a little bit more. Athletic, could move, was pretty solid, but it's a project. This is kind of what he'll be to. Well, not quite as much of a project.
No, you know, he's obviously got some time at offensive line already. So, but, you know, physically, you know, now all of a sudden that this is your profession, you know, you're not worried about going to classes and everything else. You can really focus in and hone in on improving your body and getting stronger, bigger, faster, stronger. That's what it's all about in the National Football League. So, you know, you want to get as much depth as you can on the offensive line. They were able to get some of that in free agency with the right tackle Purnell and then also Wisniewski at the center position. And now you add Cannon in the draft, and all of a sudden that offensive line room looks improved when it has competition. That's the quickest way to get better, is to create competition amongst positions.
J.P. Shatterick, Jeff Loggeman, final moments with you, Jeff, before we get to the team periods of today's practice. We will not show that live on Jaguars.com. You can get tickets, though, Jaguars.com/rookie minicamp. Come out tomorrow at 1:10 if you want to see everything live and in person tomorrow. So, moving forward, what is this? How does this day translate in the big picture? It's a small blip to start off, right, in terms of the whole grand offseason plan.
Well, to me, it's the start. Okay. You know, I mean, when you have that first day on the field, the season is getting close, and the preparation that the coaches and the players put in, starting now, and it's obviously already started in the weight room and training and things of that nature. But to me, this is kind of signifies that it's time to start honing in, because it's about time to start putting your football team together on the field to get ready for the regular season.
Jeff, we appreciate your insight today, and it's good to see you on Rookie Minicamp.
I'm going to go find me an ice water.
Have fun for that. Jeff Loggeman joining us. Our thanks to John Osier, of course, Brian Sexton, and Jeff Loggeman for joining us. Thanks to you for watching as well. We will stay with you now during the individual periods and let you watch the final few minutes. We'll be back with you live again tomorrow here on Jaguars.com. Until then, this is J.P. Shatterick saying good afternoon from the Florida Blue practice fields.